This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Joy wishes to advise the following program, Hide and Seek, is a show intended for an adult audience. Generally, our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
Hide and Seek.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy. 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 And enjoy the ride.
This next interview, I have been dreading, in one way. Really looking forward to it in another way. If you went to a dance party in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s, chances are Alan Parkinson was the one responsible for making it look pretty.
He's laughing in the background.
He is a,
chuckling, they call it.
He is a former Countdown go-go dancer.
No!
Oh, we're digging it up now.
This is royalty.
Straight to the bottom.
He is a man famous for his partying on the party circuit.
And don't forget, I was a hairdresser on Prisoner. For 5 years while I was in the Collingwood cheer squad.
Oh.
He is a raconteur of endless proportions. Alan Parkinson, welcome to Hide and Seek.
Good morning, Dean. Good morning, James.
Good
it's
morning.
A pleasure to be here. Your blog, yeah. I found very interesting.
Oh, thank you.
I had a fuck buddy before that term was used, and he was a very bad dancer.
Oh, really?
On and off the dance floor.
Oh. Did he have a big dick?
Besides the point, there's a nasty bone in my body, and I used to make him dress up, and I used to dress up in a uniform, dress him up, and I'd make him go over to the corner and dance for me, knowing that he couldn't dance, so he was going to get in trouble.
You
so I
really are a shocker.
And I'd make him dance to I'm Every Woman by Whitney Houston.
Oh, no!
In a police uniform.
This is awesome!
Yeah, this is for real too. You know, so you were looking forward to this, Dean. I've been so looking forward to this, to telling you a few of my home secrets.
As long as they're your home secrets.
They're my home secrets. Yeah. And I used to make him dance, and he was always going to get it wrong, so the punishment I won't tell you.
No, don't.
Oh, maybe in the half.
But
maybe
my
the next
hand
time.
Was sore.
Oh.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. As I said, good morning.
Good morning, Alan. Welcome to Hide and Seek.
Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning. Countdown go-go girl.
Countdown dancer. I was 19. I was a hairdresser at the time, also working on Prisoner. As I said, I was on Prisoner for like 5 years.
When you say you're working on, you were behind the scenes on Prisoner doing
the hair, mate. Yeah. The salon I worked for did that channel. So we did Prisoner, Skyways, all of that, that Young Talent time.
That would have been a great experience.
It's on Young Talent. I could tell you stories that make your hair curl.
Pardon the pun.
And it was that period where I was dancing in a club called Annabelle's, which was Blades up in one of these back streets. The other club at the time was the it used to be around here, it was like Spanish thing that was upstairs as well, but there with my mate Richie and two girls, Nella and Jolene, who now both heroin junkies or addicts or something, I don't know, dancing. And Ian Meldrum said, you guys, would you like to dance on the show?
We were the routine, the bubble
of it was full on, you know. And you know, there was me in my Ferrucci jeans and, you know, baseball top and looking all of 19. And,
gorgeous.
You know, next minute we're out at, I think it was the ABC and signing equity things, you know, and all that, and on the show until we got thrown off.
Oh, no, what did you do?
Why did you get thrown off?
Well, because, I arrived one day at the studio one Sunday and I walk into the dressing room and the two girls are standing there and, we're putting a step in the routine, Alan, and I'm like the dance captain, so no one puts a step in the routine. And I said, oh, really? I don't think so. Well, they had, so I went straight to Ian and said, Ian, you need to speak to the girls. Yeah. Came in and said, listen to Alan, you do not put any, you know. Yeah. So anyway, 20 minutes later, we're up on a podium, you know, eight cameras ready to go live, you know, countdown machine, yep.
three, two, one,
bang, and the music starts and we all start the routine. Well, when we got to the point of no return, when the girls decided to put the step in the routine, they went that way. Richie and I went that way. Massive confusion. We stopped dancing. Ian Meldrum's there going, and not one camera could pick up any shot. They went back to Ian. We in the dressing room, you're off the show. It was the girls, I said, you know.
Did they get off the show as well?
Well, we were all thrown off the show.
Bitches.
Know? But anyway, I was the only countdown dancer. I was part of the original countdown machine.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't last very long.
No.
No, well, clearly.
No, we were 3 months. But, you know, it was like an interesting thing, you know. And I've just found a bit of video on TV One. We're showing an old countdown clip. Yeah, and it was me, 1976.
Oh,
and
no.
I've got a copy of it at home.
Oh.
I've got to show you one day, Dean. There's me in my Frucci jeans, you know, shaking it like a banshee.
Yeah. A Polaroid picture, okay? Maybe. Well, yeah.
How did you make the transition from Frucci wearing go-go dancer to,
that to that?
The god of lighting design?
Well, look, it's as simple as this. I found myself living in Sydney. That was in 76. In 79, I was living in Sydney in Chatswood with my partner, and I'd sort of, you know, cloned myself up by then, you know, that was short hair, moustache, James, for you, because just, you know, you're very young, but,
yes.
You know, this is, you know, late 70s, early 80s, it's, you know, everyone looked the same. We had a moustache, we had hair on our chest, we wore a check shirt, you know. I was going on a holiday to New York with my partner, Tony, or I was going to meet him there, and I arrived in New York, I was all of... I was all of 24 or something by then or something. And I went into this nightclub called the Saint Nightclub, which is now not there. It lasted for 10 years. It was the old Fillmore East Theatre that Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix called home.
Oh, wow.
And four gay entrepreneurs brought it that year, just before I got there, and spent $4 million on it and turned it into this amazing nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a disco bunny because, you know, ex-countdown, you know, I was always at the discos back home.
You were famous,
love. I was, you know, wiggled my tush everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm in this nightclub and I walked in and I won't go into great detail, it was a legend, you know, and I looked at just the whole concept and I just said, you know, wow, hairdressing.
You can say that.
Hairdressing. I said, I don't think so. I ended up staying in New York because my lover at the time decided to dump me on the streets in New York.
Bitch.
So, yeah, you either sink or swim, darling. You know what? I've had too many lessons. So I, you know, not long in New York, I met the owner, I met Huha and Ruha, and, you know, I got well known, and I came back to Australia, and I started working in Sydney at the midnight shift, you know, because they knew I just got back, and it just took off from there, and, you know, I just remembered what I'd seen and who I'd met, and then, you know, just really self-taught myself the whole lighting thing, didn't do a nighter thing, and, you know, to think that was so long ago, and, you know, as Dean knows, I mean, it's gone on for a long time. It's turned into all sorts of lighting, you know, for fashion, every, you know. But
so you were in your lighting nightclub thing started in New York, but then migrated to Sydney.
Sydney, yes.
I want to show you something that I found online today.
Don't.
Did you know you are immortalised in Sydney's Powerhouse Museum? Do you remember that poster?
Cool with Sunny Periods. It was like
1988.
Yeah, it was probably my first step into the big party scene in Sydney. I'd got back from 1988, was it? Yeah. Oh, God, I'm just trying to think years. But anyway.
Yeah,
You turned, well, James, God love you. That's all I got. I can remember that party so vividly because it was the first time we used moving lights, you know, very lights and all
that.
What
did you have before? Candles?
Well, it was all conventional stuff, you know, which I was really talented with because I knew what I was doing, you know, and because I'd gone to this new nightclub in New York that used all that stuff. They also had
You were technologically advanced, love.
Well, at this party, we used very lights, but I wasn't allowed to press the buttons on them because it was all new and they had to come with the operator and a programmer and a tech and all that. But don't you worry, honey. It was only like a couple of years later I was
You were pushing those buttons?
I was out there. They taught me the whole machine. The desk was designed by NASA, so it was pretty full. No, and Phil Collins, actually, they this is all serious. I didn't come here to... Did this face lie? James.
He tells a good story. It's all in the delivery.
No, I know. You know, but you ask, you know what I'm
no,
like, Dan.
We're
you
loving
ask
this.
Me a question,
this.
And it just goes for days.
I'm
know?
Loving this too.
Someone's always said, write a book, Pearl, write a book. And I was
please
like,
please
oh.
don't. You will have that many lawsuits.
I know what I'm going to call. No, I wouldn't.
Pearl's wisdom.
I can be politically correct.
What are you calling the book?
Probably, there was a book written in the San Francisco. I arrived in San Francisco in the year of 87. To do some work, and a guy just finished a book, and I met him literally on that day, and he actually got me into it before it was published, and it was the first gig I was doing, and he said on this back page, Alan Parkinson writes today, arrives today, and it was called The Tribal Rights of San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah, you can still get it, Dean. It's a legendary book. It was written on all the nightclub history from the 70s right up to the 80s, and like, you know, all those old disco singers like Lisa and all that, and Patrick Cowley and all that were all interviewed, and all the nightclub owners and managers.
And it's a real insight to the time, isn't it?
Yeah, and I arrived in San Francisco. It was 87, yeah, and I'd started work at Trocadero, where most of this book had been, you know, what was in this book. And, you know, I met David DeBold, and he's like, oh, you've got to go in this book. And he's like, called the publishers, like, just hold everything. And he put one more page in it and just said, Alan Parkinson arrives today. And it was published, and it came out while I was living there, and he gave me a copy of it. And you've got to read it. It's amazing. It's just comments and, you know, blogs before the word blog was even invented, you know.
Yes.
And just people just, you know, downloading from their heart to this guy, and he's writing it down like a bitch, you know.
Amazing.
So it's called The Tribal Rights of San Francisco. So I think I'd have to, you know, The Tribal Rights of, I don't want to say Australia, but I don't know, but, you know.
Down Under.
Down Under, yeah, The Tribal Rights of Down Under, you know. But I will remind you about this book, because I think you would really love to read it. But anyway, so, you know, it's got back to Australia, and then, you know, cool sunny period
so
kicked off.
So first, I guess, Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras party was 1988, and that's what is called the
98
cool with sunny periods.
98, 2000. No, I did the smaller Mardi Gras before they were at the Horden, yeah, because the Mardi Gras was 31, and I was doing them from out of, yeah, I mean, look, that was their first winter party, okay? Mardi Gras did one winter party, and that was it. Okay, and that's what was cool on Sunny Periods. Yes, that was the fundraiser. That's when they decided to do their first fundraiser,
and that evolved into sleazeball.
Yes, yes. No, sleazeball was already happening. No, this was Queen's birthday, and it was the only one that happened in the Horden.
Right, one of those minor parties.
Yeah, because it was not long after that. Miss Wall, who I went to the football with, Tracy Wall, as we all know, who is
Tracy from Midsummer,
absolutely, and originally also produced those mega also parties at Shed 14, parties, the big ones.
Yeah.
We sat and watched the football yesterday, and I said, darling, I said, could we deal with having 6,000 people in a venue again in Melbourne? And she said, what do you think? I said, of course, you know, because those parties, they're legendary history.
Alan Parkinson, are you telling me that the big dance parties of yesteryear might have a comeback?
Well, look, I didn't come in here at midnight for nothing, basically. You know, there is a reason. And the reason is pretty much why I'm back in Melbourne at the moment, and I've decided to come back here to live and settle. It's because, as you know, I've been gone for the last 6.5 years. I've only been back for 5 months. And all due respect to everybody, but let's go back 8 years and 9 years to those parties in Melbourne that, like, happened 3 times a year, and they were mammoth. They set the benchmark.
And packed.
They set the benchmark for the dance party memory books, you know. This is, and Sydney had Mardi Gras and sleazeball, but that's all they really had. But then, you know, Melbourne went biggity boom, biggity boom, and, you know, Sydney, oh, okay, Jesus, okay, well, okay, fair enough, okay, well, you know, they go to Melbourne and, you know, middle of winter and stand in a shed. 6,800 was the record. I've got a good memory, haven't I, Doug?
That's amazing.
Alan.
Yeah, I know.
They can get 40,000 people
into a stadium.
Into a stadium.
Yeah, but look at Sensation.
Yeah,
I've met the three boys that run Sensation.
Joy sponsors.
Yes, yes, and, you know, all due respect to that mega company.
You know, yeah.
Mega company. Their production manager is a friend of mine. They market themselves to a pinpointed crowd, you know?
Yes, yes.
And they know exactly how to do it. And, you know, Melbourne, in my eyes, although I think there's a little bit of complacency going on with the events and the music to start with in this town, I think it's dropped a few notches, but, you know... it's sensations like the coming together of all the bigger straight parties, you know.
It is, yeah. And welcoming
and
they're, everybody.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, and welcome, open arms, you know, and saying, hey, come along, dress white, and we'll turn it on for you.
But did they set a new benchmark for the likes of you, or are you talking about something, I guess, with... A community focus.
Well, their community focus, yeah, that on the more straighter crowd. But anybody's welcome. But if you look back, I was talking to Tracy about this yesterday, and we were talking about that. Remember the hardware parties, which became, you know, Welcome 2000 and all that, you know, and that's when they all started the big, you know, the big straighter parties in Melbourne, and Future Entertainment, you know, really took off, and there was a lot going on 9 years back in Melbourne.
It was huge, you and know, look, I then have you had the vivid memories of Deborah Legay and Kerry Legore coming down on this giant ship that went through the audience.
Shed 14.
In Shed 14. With this ship had wings that flapped over the audience.
I was lighting that monstrous mother effer.
And this, there was another amazing performance there, which was these shopping trolleys with Japanese geisha girls.
Barry Kosky directing the shows, and it was the locker room set, right? It was all the boys and the girls coming out of the lockers, and above it was a ramp, and it was Tracy Wall's girlfriend at the time pushing a shopping trolley in a kimono.
It was the most amazing...
Twisted, artistic...
Beautiful.
Beautiful piece of, like, big picture,
that
you know?
That sticks in my memory.
Yeah.
We're talking to Alan Parkinson. He has been very, very famous for doing many of the big parties. He's a lighting guy extraordinaire, and he's got a few things coming up that he'll talk to us about shortly too. You're on Hide and Seek with James Finlay and Dean Beck on Joy 94.9.
Hide.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Hide and seek.
Sponsored by Circuit Bar. Circuit.com.au.
Alan.
Dean. Jenny.
The microphone is live.
I'm usually asleep by this time.
I know, and you're doing a wonderful job.
And I'm of age, no?
Yeah.
Oh,
ain't that modest. The truth?
I was 52 this year.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I was 50. Well, with that
your
history
energy,
that I just told, my
yeah,
energy.
Yeah, you're right, it does add up.
Yeah, it but does, yeah.
Where do you get your energy from?
I'm
you
an Aries.
That says it all, really.
I'm an Aries. I know what I like. I know what I don't like. I'll compromise.
And when you crash, you crash.
I tend to
disappear.
Crash, but I've gotten you. Yeah, I. What the, well, I go and walk about.
Right, that's good therapy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where do you just walk around, or you leave the city? Or?
I have. That's another story one day. That's a private story, James.
But you also like to ride. To ride a bike.
I ride. Yes, I have a mountain bike. It's not a bad mountain bike. I've always had a bicycle, and I never learned to drive. I never learned to use a motorbike or anything like that. I've always been passionate about my push bike.
Yep.
And literally, I'm on it as much as I can. Literally. Try to keep away from the rain and all that, you know. Now, once upon a time, I'd ride around that.
Now, I was doing some research on you, Alan, and I found, thanks to pinkboard.com.au, they have a full catalogue, if you like, of all of the past Mardi Gras, sleazeball posters, dating back to the 70s, in fact.
Yeah, they would.
And your name appears at about 1986.
I think there was a...
Yeah, for a Mardi Gras event.
Yeah, yeah.
And for years, you were doing every sleazeball.
Yeah.
You sort of went away and then you came back.
Yep.
And Did you piss off those board members and then you had to wait till there was a whole new board before you could get invited back? What happened there?
Well, look, I'm up for it. Look, you don't have to piss off a whole board of people to be put
only
out
one
to
or
pasture,
two's enough.
Okay? As I've always called it, to be put out to pasture. So let's say I've been put out to pasture once or twice, not so much by the board. I've never gone over budget to start with.
That's a big call for any party.
And that's worldwide. Any wow. event. So, you know, there are some pros and cons about hiring me, but, you know, there's only one person that's got, their nose has got to get out of the trash. You know what my downfall was, Dean? And, you know, I'm going to say this. I mean, as what you've been reading out, you know, I know what when it comes to lighting, I know what I'm doing. I always have. I've been very outspoken. I'm very passionate about it. And there was a time when, you know, I was really the only one. And whippersnappers came up underneath me, which I embraced. But, you know, God, these young kids that just want to be you, you know. Not mentioning any names. I met one person one night. I was introduced to him. And someone said, Alan, would you mind? Not at all. Introduce me. Alan, this is such and such. I said, it's a pleasure to meet you. And he looked at me and said, I just want to be you one day. And I said, you'll never be me, but I really hope you just got it, you know. What do you say to someone, Dean?
You say your success has been brought about by you being true to you.
Yeah, I think.
When we identify what our God-given talent is,
yeah,
and realise that and not put ourselves down for the good that we can do,
yep.
Actually acknowledging it to ourselves is not that easy. We are very good at fucking up with our heads and telling us that we're not good enough, that we don't do it well enough, that there are others better than us. But when you actually get it, that you're good at that.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's been moments, you know, where I've been put out to pasture because there's someone that's got onto a committee that has a personal vendetta about you because, you know, you are. I mean,
someone else to promote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't need to mention any names, but also just when people hold personal vendettas against you because of what you've done and what you've, you know, and where you've got. To
tall
hold
poppy
you back,
syndrome.
To hold you back. And what's that?
Tall poppy syndrome.
Yes, but also, you could call it that, but also a lot of people, and, you know, it doesn't matter their sexual orientation or whatever, but a lot of people don't like to see people succeed, you know, and if they get the opportunity to pull them back a notch, they will for whatever reasons. And I find that very sad, but that has happened to me quite a lot. Mm. Over the lifespan, the years I've been doing things, but I had to learn to. Okay, it's not me; it's just them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you just get through it.
But a couple of times, James, it would shatter me that I'd get told, "You're not getting this gig," and I knew what the real reasons were. But you know, it's just. But anyway, I'm you know, and as you were just sort of saying about embracing what you do, you just got to move forward, you know.
Mm.
And I think that's one reason why. You know, I still have this energy because I learnt, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, you just got to keep moving forward. You don't let people pull you back.
No. You're right. And moving forward means acknowledging and learning.
Yes, totally. Paying attention to what is happening at the moment to you.
But not getting caught up in what has been done.
The micro whatever of it
and,
all.
And making yourself wrong for things that you've fucked up
wrong reason.
Forever.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You draw a line in the sand and say, right, well, today is what I'm going to do today.
Exactly, you know, and...
You're a big person with a big personality, though, and so it makes you an easy target.
And, you know, I've learned that, you know, and... but, you know, one thing, it hasn't... And I'm glad, I say this with all the love in my own heart, I'm glad I'm still me, you know?
Oh, of course, yeah.
And I would.
I'm really glad that I'm still. I'm not. I haven't conformed and, you know, been controlled and been. You know, which it does happen to some people professional level.
It's just like as Dean said before. You know, it's being who you are who has got to where you are now.
Yeah, but me being true to myself too, James. Where you know we see in TV shows how people in professional levels shatter people to bring them down a notch to wound them. And some people don't bounce back. Some people haven't got the energy or the determination or whatever, for whatever reasons, to keep, you know, just like, no, you know, I've still got to be me, you know. It's like, so, but yeah, you know, but I love what I do, you know.
Just for you at home to get an understanding of Alan's creativity, you may recall Midsummer lighting the spire at the Arts Centre pink during the festival for a number of years. That was an idea that was copied from Alan's original idea. Alan, tell us the original concept behind lighting up the public buildings in
City Hall building in San Francisco for Gay Pride Week. And it was the year of 2001, I think. Yes, it was early 2000s. Because, as you know,
and you were in San Francisco.
I was lighting the Gay Pride party, right?
And thought, oh, City Hall, let's make it pink.
Oh no, the party was actually in. And have you seen Milk, the movie?
Yes.
Right. You know the rotunda inside City Hall, mm-hmm. where he walks up the marble steps.
Oh,
that marble floor was the dance floor. The shows were on that. I lit five parties in that rotunda. I lit architecturally that building.
Wow.
I so wish more people from this country had have seen the Gay Pride celebrations and the parties at that moment. For 5 years in a row, I did. It was called Reunion. What a great name for a party, Reunion, on Gay Pride. Mm. You know, I think it says everything.
Particularly at a time when the community was very much suffering.
Suffering like you wouldn't believe.
How did that affect you, being on the ground there?
Oh, jeez, Christ. I mean, you know, for 5 years I went back and forth to America, whether it was to Palm Springs, San Francisco, LA, New York, and worked on these big parties and saw people come and go.
And die.
And I saw the devastation of drug infliction on communities, but people also inflicting that upon themselves. And you know, I'd go over to San Francisco or somewhere for a party. I'd be back 3 months later, and I'd say to someone, "Oh, where's such and such?" And they say, "Oh, in rehab or whatever."
Or
but
dead,
not just that, or dead, or you know, or whatever. Or oh, they're trying to bring this law. And you know, it was just from a boy from Melbourne. You know, mm. I was taking it all in and embracing it all because I knew this is more for me to learn as a person. This is more for me to embrace. And you know, that party. The Gay Pride party I did, it was called Reunion, which was actually held in the rotunda on the marble floor. No wooden dance floor foot down. The shows were on the staircase. And I lit the dome from the inside and out. And the first year I did it, the party director got approval from the board of supervisors and the mayor for me to be able to light the outside for the whole Gay Pride week, hot pink, and the inside. And the party started at dusk, so, you know, they were dancing on the marble floor. You could see all the architecture and everything. And as the night just all of a sudden went dark, this dome lit up hot pink with rainbow flags running 100 metres from the ceiling down, but in lighting shades of lights.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I could tell you some stories, just like, you know, just amazing. I mean, that book's getting closer, doll.
I can see why you're inspired to bring elements of that back here to Melbourne.
Look, you know, Melbourne's got a lot of history when it comes down to...
We were at the forefront at one point in time.
Yes.
We had great parties.
But Melbourne was the leader. We were not just the parties, but the music in Melbourne.
Well, the nightclubs in the 90s were internationally renowned.
On the AAA list, I would say, you know.
Absolutely.
And because I was back and wow. forth to the States, and I was going to clubs, and, you know, I'd be working, you know, like if I was in New York working at a party, well, the next night I was off. Well, you know, honey, I was out to that nightclub, knocking on the door the next night when they were opening to go in, and so I could let my hair down and dance and be a human being, because that's where it all started.
James won't remember this, but there was where the market is mm-hmm. in Paran. Prior to that was, of course, Three Faces.
Prior to that was
Checkpoint Charlie.
And prior to that was the Market Hotel.
Indeed, it was Gay then. But during the 18 months or so that it was Checkpoint Charlie, that place was totally transformed and was in every design magazine the world over.
Worldwide, yes.
And was the place to go to.
Well, I mean, since I've saw you as well, I mean, I've actually designed a few nightclubs. You know, I designed... I was part of ARC in Sydney. I designed Gas Nightclub in Sydney, Tank Nightclub in Sydney.
And by that you mean crowd control, flow?
I actually worked on the technical design of things.
Lighting mix and the sound.
Right. Or, you know you're part of a concept. You know, we're talking about nightclubs that are purposely built, you know. Mm. So you know, everyone comes in from the ground up. I mean... You know, the Tank Nightclub in Sydney, which is a Justin Hems venue, you know, the establishment.
Mm.
And, you know, Sydney family, but originally, you know, Merivale and Mr. John Clothing. You know, that was like the nightclub originally, when first time I went into, I was going into sewers under a big building in Sydney with hard hats and rats and all that. And I'm like, what, to this company? You want it's me to amazing. Design a nightclub
with,
here?
With and they're the like, walls yeah,
yeah, decaying. Yeah, 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 yeah.
It was burnt out, wasn't it?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, hee-haw, burnt out. Yeah, I wonder why.
Shut you know? Yeah.
And
it's been transformed.
Yeah, you know, so that's the difference about, you know, also nightclubs in the 90s in this country, where the ones were purposely built, but the ones that were like made over, you know, they were in magazines like you wouldn't believe.
We're with Alan Parkinson talking about a little bit of the history of the dance party scene here in Australia, and he's got the closing party for Melbourne Leather Pride. You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek. I think you'd have to be gentle.
Our special guest here in Exposé After Midnight, Alan Parkinson.
Amazing stories, can I just say?
Pleasure to be here, guys. Absolutely.
Alan, you've had a big career. Tell us some of the highlights of your many years in the club scene.
In the club scene. Okay. Sydney, Mardi Gras and the RHI. I'm not going to try and remember what year it was, but it was the first year they did indoor fireworks. It was roughly 3 a.m. and to a
indoor fireworks.
Indoor fireworks, yes, to a classical piece where they stopped the music, classical piece, indoor fireworks. Oh, and there's wow. a photo in the original Mardi Gras book of someone at the back of them and all the fireworks in front of them, and it's actually a photo of me that they took, and it's a double spread, yeah. And I remember standing there looking at these indoor fireworks exploding to classical music and just thinking, you know, 8,000 people in front of me just under this, you know, Red Raw, Shed 14, when the party opened at midnight, when they let everybody through.
And the fireworks yes, went down the hall. Down the hallway.
Open up.
And the curtains
yeah, went. Open up. Amazing.
And I've got to tell you, listener.
And then New York City on Fire Island on the beach at roughly 3 o'clock in the morning, and the rain started coming really slow, and sprinkling just a mist, and I put all the lights up into the clouds and lit the clouds, and the whole party erupted. So then I lit the crashing waves on one side of the dance floor. And then the Black Party in New York, standing in an old theatre with 10,000 men in leather underneath me, just dancing to music, and just I just stand there thinking, how thankful am I to be here yeah. and seeing this and being part of it, you know? And amazing memories, but, you know, more to create.
More to create, you're quite right. That Red Raw that you referred to, which had the fireworks
yes.
and the curtains that revealed the space.
Remember that they kept there was, everyone back.
They kept everyone in this up one end of, yep. of the hall, and you were isolated, and there was a countdown to midnight. But the countdown to midnight started 2 hours beforehand.
Didn't it?
And they had the whole walkways and everything surrounding the building were wired up to speakers. And you would get this 15 minutes to showtime.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And yeah. it would just echo throughout the entire external space yeah. as you were herded into this closed-off section. Mm. And then the countdown got more and more yeah. closer together, yeah. and then the whole place just exploded. Yeah. It was and out on the water.
On the water, fireworks going off.
Fireworks yeah. went off from yeah. pontoons yeah. as the doors opened. It was just out yeah. of this world.
Continuity.
Alan, we had someone remind us that it was the university club in the city.
That wasn't the club I was thinking about, but the university club was a was on Collins Street,
right.
on the seventh floor at the upper end of Collins Street. That wow. was part of, yes.
Our hide-and-seek listeners are pretty terrific.
They are on it, I tell you. They're on it. I've got to watch what... Yeah,
no, some of them have been on it too.
Annabelle's, which was Blades, and around the corner there was another hotel, which was a white hotel, near the old Barclay Theatre.
Alan, you've planted the seed now that
yes.
There are big things to come as from you.
I've settled back in Melbourne, mate.
Can I say it's great
I'm
to
really
have you
excited.
Back.
I'm really excited now.
It really is good to have your yeah. energy back, to have you back.
Thank you.
And we're looking forward to your Melbourne Leather Pride party at
closing
the Market
party.
Hotel. Yes. Closing party at the Market Hotel. When is it again?
27th of September, 2 p.m. to midnight on a Sunday. All are welcome.
Day party, two night.
Yeah.
Day into night.
Yeah, day into night.
Tickets available from the Market, I guess.
No, they're available for Manhouse, Lucretia de Sade, Hairs and Hyenas, Band Clothing, Beat Bookshop and Danish Blue Bookshop.
And they'll be able to tell you the price.
Exactly.
Alan Parkinson, thank you very much for joining
us
here on Hide and Seek.
Thank you, Dean.
Hide and seek.
Sponsored by Circuit Bar. Circuit.com.au.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.